When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League as well. Coming live from California, I'm Robbie Musto and he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Ralph Rangnick's Man United drop points at Turf Moor. Impressive Southampton dominant over lacklustre Spurs. Arsenal get back to winning ways at Wolves. Diogo Jota scores again as Liverpool beat a toothless Leicester. Man City go 9 points clear at the top of the table with a win versus Brentford. And Newcastle get out of the relegation zone after scoring three past Everton. All that coming up in today's episode. Robbie, my friend, we are here in California, mate. Living the dream, living the dream. Stunning weather. Very lucky to be around the SoFi Stadium for the Super Bowl on Sunday. It's very cool to be around it. We had a look in the stadium yesterday, which is an incredible, incredible stadium when you actually get inside and see how it's kind of, it's actually underground. The pitch,
yeah,
the level is
fantastic.
Underground.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a bowl underground.
I'd
just like to say, Mossy, before, so you're welcome. This is California. This is where you're welcome, my friend. This is where we live. This is what we do.
Yeah, this is where you come from, mate. This is where you fly back on a Monday after a show or something, or a weekend. You're like, I'm going to go back to like 70
take
degrees.
Take the dogs down on the beach. And
I'm going to be shoveling snow probably in Connecticut.
Well, you've got to know your position in life, my friend, and I think we know ours. Let's get to the football. Burnley faced Manchester United at Turf Moor. A Burnley team that was struggling for wins, and they won all season. A Manchester United team that were struggling to put, I think, consistency that people have thought together, Rob. It's interesting, isn't it? Because Ralf Rangnick's come into the football club. Obviously, Ollie's gone. Michael Carrick's moved on. And he's somewhat, I don't know if it's a club, I don't know if it's a situation, I don't know where Manchester United are, but he's almost become, not through his own making, he's quite a divisive personality, hasn't he, Ralf Rangnick? Some kind of enjoying what he's doing and can see the work, and others are like, well, are they really much better? Is there much improvement? There seems to be this that follows around Manchester United. People are either, it's not much better than it was before, or actually, let's give this guy time. It looks like there's some platform and a basis for something to grow on.
Yeah, and on that, I thought, you know, the first 45 minutes of Manchester United, Rob, we both sat in the studio, we both watched them play, fast start, good football.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Pogba scores a really good goal, I think, on the 19th minute. And it was a good performance. I know it changed in the second half, and they couldn't handle Burnley's kind of high energy, really, really stepped up the pace for Burnley at home. They aren't actually good at Turf Moor. You know, people talk about how Burnley are so great at Turf Moor. They've won one game all season. So they haven't been great at Turf Moor. And United couldn't handle it. And Harry Maguire, Rob, I thought, struggled. Mm. Now, in general, and I don't mind Harry Maguire, thinking of Rafael Varane coming to the football club, a partnership, they're kind of different the way that they play.
Yeah.
This could be good. This could work out. You know, Maguire goes, heads everything and gets to the ball and pressures the ball and attacks the ball. And Varane's quicker, more intelligent player, reads it, can sweep up. I liked the thought of the combination. Now, you know, Maguire's had some bad times, had some good times, had quite a lot of bad times. Another bad game for him, Rob. And I've got to be honest, I'm starting to think, well, is he good enough? Like, is he? And I know he's a captain, and I know an England international, and I know, you know, he's a great lad and everything else. But the way that Burnley, it was big Weghorst, wasn't it, that turned him
inside. Weghorst, yeah.
And then he couldn't get, he looked slow getting back to try and stop that Burnley goal going in. Mm. I want to get onto other stuff about Rangnick, but just on Harry Maguire, Rob, are we, you know, we don't want to be the ones that jump on a player when he's back in when he's been out for a little while, he's back in a team. I think I've been pretty patient with Harry Maguire. I know the United fans, a lot of them really don't rate Maguire,
I'm starting to think now, wow, like this is another one, another game where, you know, they didn't play great second half. They should hold on there. They shouldn't concede a goal. You know, what, where are you standing with Maguire and his, I don't know, his quality to be a first choice centre back at Manchester United?
If I'm honest, from the start, I've never been a total buy into to Harry Maguire. I think he's a great guy. I think he does his best in terms of what, how he captains his football club. I don't think he's athletic enough, Rob. I think he's had a number of partners. We've seen him with Rafael Varane now, who should be the Rolls-Royce partner next to him and can do the things that he wants to do. It doesn't necessarily look all that much better. Listen, you pay the kind of money they paid for him, I think you, and you give him the captaincy, I think you try and work him through and work him in the position. But he's never really been, I've got to be honest, Rob, he's never really been, from the day they signed him from Leicester City, he was never really one of those that, that took me. He's had his moments where he's looked better, obviously with possession, plays out, maybe in a three might suit him better than a two. But in this league, when you say you're going to Burnley, and Weghorst, who's just come into the league, and the quality of forwards that you've got, if Manchester United have to keep, or you're saying, if there's a position where we have to keep worrying about your centre-back, that's not going to bring you success. Manchester City have won titles based off the Vincent companies and now the Ruben Diaz's and the Ports, the Stones, etc. Liverpool, go and get Van Dijk, we see what the difference is. You know, the Chelsea teams that won things with JT and whoever his partners were in the past, we've always known that back to. I'm not sure Harry Maguire is ever going to be talked of at that level, and that's a worry down the road. It's not the most important thing right now for Manchester United, but I think down the road that could be a worry.
Yeah, you know, I want to revisit the game a little bit, Rob, because obviously the game goes on, you know, you make notes, you have thoughts about what you're seeing. First of all, the thing I see is 4-3-3. Bruno is a number 8, Paul Pogba is a number 8, McTominay holding, like it. Who doesn't like that? Who doesn't like that? Bruno, maybe he'd prefer to be a little bit more central as a number 10, but he has the ability to get back and get forward into the box and create things. Same with Paul Pogba, Rob. We didn't see him a lot for Manchester United in this time, playing, you know, in a 4-3-3, one of the wider ones that can get forward up and down, box to box a little bit if you like. So, you know, the start was very, very good. I thought it was a very energetic start. I thought it was a very creative start. I thought it was a well-balanced team performance. At 45 minutes, I'm making notes like, look like a team. No drama at the back. Like, everything under control. So, you know, really, really impressive. And, you know, I've said for a couple of weeks now, Rob, maybe a little bit more than that, that it's different. This is better. Manchester United. And I know that I go on social media and people's comments and the websites, the newspapers are full of, you know, who's next? The players want Pochettino, the players doesn't want him, they want this guy, or which I'm, you know, it's hearsay for staff, by the way. But I think people are starting to think that Ragnick's not great and we'll get somebody else. It's going to be Pochettino, as if there's some kind of magic guy that's going to come in and have a balanced team that defends well, that wins the ball back well, that creates and scores a ton of goals. Not easy. I'm saying it again. There is still signs that he is going in the right direction. Stat for you, Rob. 30 shots in the last three games in all competitions, just three goals. 70 shots.
Did
I say 30?
Yeah, 70 shots.
Three goals in the last three in all competitions. Now, I know the opposition wasn't great. Is that the manager's fault, Rob? That they're creating, that they're having 70 shots and they're not scoring the goals? I mean, that's a team that's looking defensively better. It's definitely winning the ball back better, more organised, and it's creating chances too.
There's an argument about how clinical they are. I saw some of the stats, some I was reading before the game, and you make making notes that I think there's only been on three or four occasions they've got a second goal in games. They've given, so they've either scored one or less goals. So that's never given the comfort position. Now, it would seem through stats and expected goals and all that, the numbers are good. So we then come to, Rob, a couple of things and we talked about. The forward line is probably not flourishing as well as I thought it would.
Agreed.
Marcus Rashford's a struggle. Cristiano Ronaldo's been a bit up and down even by his standard. I think it's no goals in five now. Cavani came in, looked lively, but obviously with his age and didn't score. Jadon Sancho's having a couple of moments, but not quite at the level. So all of a sudden,
it looked better.
You've got a front line that's not firing. Hmm. I just want to take you back to, and it's not a case of, because we agreed in many things we saw in the first half, and I did like the pivot of Bruno and Pogba. My worry with that pivot, my worry with the control of the game, because my worry for Ragnar is, seeing bits that I like, seeing moments I like, seeing periods of I liked, not quite seeing a 90-minute performance right. yet. And I don't, you know, is that him? Is that the players? What is that, you know, a feeling amongst the group? I don't know. But that my sort of worry with the Pogba-Bruno axis, Rob, is great when we're on top of the ball and playing well. When we haven't got so much control, when we haven't got the ball, is there enough in that middle of the field to help McTominay or Fred or whoever's sitting there against better teams? Because if that's the way we're going to go, that's what Liverpool do, that's maybe what a Chelsea can do. Can Manchester United do that as well, sort of toe-to-toe with three in midfield and with three forwards?
Yeah, it's a fair point, and it's a very valid point. And in certain games, Rob, we're going to be looking at it as midfield players. We're going to look at that and look at the help that McTominay's getting. But he's got the option, and I like that he tried the option. It's Burnley. You know, they expected to go there and control possession, which they did in the first 45 minutes. But you make a valid point about the whole 90 minutes. I mean, what you know, it was a difficult job to go into in terms of trying to get this group to play like a team. We saw that under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer this season. I've said it a couple of times that the players are allowed to run wild and there's no kind of organisation. They'd lose a couple of goals, they'd come back and score three, and it was kind of dramatic and crazy. Yeah. He has stopped that.
Yeah.
It's just moving through the gears and finding ways to win games, get results. And, maybe it's going to take a little bit of time to get a full 90 minutes good performance.
Can I throw this one at you, though, a little bit about this group? When they start to suffer, sometimes fold. They were 1-0 up against Burnley. Burnley didn't play well. 4-4-2. We know what Sean Dyche, big horse, is up front with Rodriguez. You know, the Chris Wood's gone. He's got Cornet and McNeil trying to get forward, mate. It wasn't happening for Burnley. We knew what Sean Dyche would go in and say. He would get the team revved up. They'd start to play more like Burnley play. The moment Burnley kicked into gear and got into the second half, they dominated possession, they won knockdowns, and they got themselves a goal. Now, the good teams in this league withstand that, Rob, and come out after 15 minutes and then kick on again. And whether you win it 1-0, but it's just this group somehow, you know, I love hearing Tuchel and Klopp, and sometimes Pop says it, but less so because of City's dominance. But sometimes we have to suffer and go through that suffering. And Chelsea have done it, and Liverpool do it. Manchester United at the moment don't seem like they're resilient in one of your duels. Like, they go through that suffering and knowing that we've got 15 minutes to deal with Burnley, put their fires out a little bit, and then we'll get back to the game.
A different centre-half next to Varane in this game might have seen it out at 1-0. They got a couple of decisions in the first half, the VAR.
Yeah, the VARs,
The two goals, disallowed goals.
But we are where we are. We're 1-0 up. At Burnley, they haven't played well. For 15 minutes, Sean Dyche is going to get them at it. Now we've got to match fire with fire, haven't we? And deal with that and then come out the other end.
And Maguire didn't.
Yeah.
Maguire didn't.
Well, it's hard to say just Maguire,
well,
I think.
When the goal that was scored, like, it was pretty poor defensive that he's allowed to turn inside him and... But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something to watch. My thoughts are, though, that shouldn't be flippantly this manager and what he's trying to do disregarded. And who's next? This isn't good enough. It's lazy. It's a lazy way of talking about Manchester United. When you look at them and you know what they were in the months before, he's trying to make them more of a team, Rob. And I think everybody must appreciate it, but understand that that's the right way to go. Even if it's not super fluid, and it hasn't been. It was better in the first half in terms of creating stuff. They just got the one goal where maybe, like Middlesbrough and like some others, they should be finishing it off. And I think you make a good point. The front players aren't scoring. We've just watched Liverpool. We'll talk about Liverpool in a little bit. God, talk about front players that are incredibly hungry to score goals. Sancho was better, by the way, Rob, I thought.
Yeah, it was better. He looked more confident on the left-hand side.
Rashford is... Do you get a couple of moments that might produce something, but probably doesn't? Cavani was at a poor game. Ronaldo came on. So it's not a brilliant team of players, Rob, which I know that Man United expect to have. So a combination of that, the manager trying to find a way to be solid and to then to create and score, it's not an easy job. And we'll see. You know, it's who have they got the weekend? They play the first game, don't they? Early 7:30 Eastern time.
Yes, Southampton.
Peacock. It's Southampton at home.
Yeah. Who are we going to talk about now? And we'll have a quick word on that one, because let's take it to
the longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You knew why I talked Lane. Tottenham Hotspur, Antonio Conte in charge of the team, and certainly I think we've seen his influence, a difference in Spurs. This was his first defeat at home, lost 2-3 to Southampton. I think we both were incredibly impressed with the Southampton team, well set up by Ralf Hasenhüttl. A Tottenham team that didn't have much possession in the first half, or play an almost counter-attack, got themselves ahead through an own goal, but never ever really looked like they were controlling the game, Rob. And let's talk Southampton first, I think, on this one, because I think sometimes we don't sometimes give teams enough credit outside the big six. This group of players, Rob, when you look from top to bottom, are average Premier League players generally. Brozier's a talent on loan. Ward-Prowse is a technical. Very technically gifted midfield player. But when you look elsewhere, Walker Peters, who wasn't good enough for Tottenham, let out the door. Perot on the left-hand side. Bednarik, Salisu, people have been Romeo.
Joe Armstrong's a good player. Romeo's got some pedigree.
Shea Adams, you know, still kind of proving himself at this level. So what this turns to me, and I'm going to go straight for it early on, Rob, is the value of a coach and the quality of coaching can improve the team as well as individuals. And I'm going to go straight away for my underappreciated performer of the week is Ralf Hasenhüttl. Oh. Right in there, Ralfie. And it was really interesting. I don't know if you saw this week. There was some chat where he was saying, you know, he's been 4 or 5 years at this club, which is a great testament to him, really, that he's continued at his club, he's continuing to improve players, he's lost players, yourself, Ing and Vestergaard and people in the summer, and he still continues to do well. I know some people thought they'd be in the relegation bottom three. I won't say who, was not very far away from me sitting on the other side of the camera. But he continues to play, he gets on loan players, we talk about Brozier and Walker Peters and the likes, and there was talk this week, Rob, where I heard him saying, you know, I'm not going to be Roy Hodgson, I'm not going to be forever, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be staying in the game. And I just think, you know what, there's a real coach here. There's a real coach who, and I don't want to be disrespectful to Southampton, but could make the next step up. I think he is in this group are.
Yeah, I mean, they were disappointed last season. They lose some important players in Danny Ings and Vestergaard, etc. And that had us, well, certainly me, thinking they could struggle this year. They could get relegated. But, of course, the signing of Amanda Brozier is a great one. And you're back to the coaching ability. I mean, this 4-2-2-2, which he played, battered Spurs. Battered them. Like, they couldn't. I mean, it was... I mean, it was so impressive, Rob. It was so impressive, given, you know, Spurs that are buzzing with their new manager. They've got this new stadium. Yeah. You know, the front players are Moura, Kane and Heung-min Son. And yet, Southampton had the confidence and the ability and the tactical understanding and how they're used to it and they're grooved in it. Played through them all the time. Elie Nussey and Armstrong, in off the wings, in between the midfield players. I mean, they had so much ball. I mean, it was the football, the possession, the territory, and the pressing. Everything that you want in a performance, he saw it. Afterwards, he said, Rob, that's, you know, I'm not sure we can play any better than that. That's probably the best that we've ever played since I've been at the football club. And many people said the same thing. And everybody who watched that first half is like applauding at seeing a team like that can that outplay a team like Spurs. It's well coached and it's well organized. Mm. And they've got their own issues, which we'll get to. But you're right that we spend a bit of time on Southampton and give love to the manager and give love to some of these players. And you make a great point that there isn't. I mean, Ward-Prowse is a special player. This crossability for two of the goals is ridiculous. It's stunning.
It's interesting, Rob, because I watched the highlights again, because we were talking about, weren't we, his two assists. That's what he does quite cleverly. So they play in that 2-2-2 where they roll in the wing players.
Yeah.
And then when
that
happens, he often drifts himself out a little bit to give him, he buys a bit of space because everybody else is in the middle. And that's where he starts his deliveries.
And I saw a couple of,
almost looks to me like it's a tactic to narrow everything in and then can we get him out there and get him on the ball delivering into the box. Really smart play.
It's a good shout, yeah. And that first time, right-footed crosses are on the money every single time and created two of the goals. So, yeah, underappreciated, Ralf Hasenhüttl. It's a good shout. And I think they're up to 10th place in the Premier League right now, which is brilliant for them,
given
the struggles of last season, etc. Struggling is Tottenham Hotspur, Rob. And I think we were like, wow, like shocked at how they were kind of outplayed in the first half.
Yeah.
Maybe not surprised that Antonio Conte at halftime gets something different from them. We were talking whether they would make changes tactically to try and stop Southampton's dominance or whether he'd say, okay, enough's enough. How about let's have a go a little bit and let's try and press them a little bit and let's try and step up the energy a little bit. And that's what they did in the second half. It was much, much better. Big intensity from the team. And then the goals, of course, kept flying in and it was a remarkable game. But I think everybody knows at Tottenham what the problem is. It's defensively and it's the defending players. Mm. Whether you think about Davinson Sanchez, Romero, Emerson Royal, and he plays a wing back in this system.
Mm. Not
wing back
enough.
Still, no.
Not good enough for me,
still
Rob.
Have to defend. You've still got to defend. They've still got to tuck around to clear out balls and make there's no space at the back post. He's slow to do that. That's where at least two of the goals came from.
Yeah.
As well as Ben Davis made a mistake. That's where they need strengthening.
I mean, where are we talking with Conte? Where they want to be, Rob? Those players ain't good enough.
No.
I mean, you get rid of Walker Peters. I'd take Walker Peters over Emerson Royale. Yeah.
I'll take Matt Doherty right now in the team.
Yeah, there's just not enough players. It's interesting, just want to get your thought, because I know you've seen a lot of Bedsker and I was talking about. He came on, got ones to get on the ball, done it confident, gets one to make passes. Do you see him starting soon? I mean, it was interesting, he took Højbjerg off and it was Bedsker and Winks that stayed on the pitch, which I was a little surprised, thought it might have left Højbjerg there on the experience. And Kulusevski came on a little bit later, obviously weren't able to influence the game that much, but I get the sense with Conte, having bought them here and having done the business with Paratici and bought them over from Italy, he's going to want to get them in the team if things aren't going well.
Fans want them in the team as well, Rob. Bentancur comes on, fricks a couple of balls, keeps possession. He's active. He's an active player. He wants the ball all the time. Mm. And he's busy. He's good on the ball. He makes good passes, forward passes as well. He's got good ability. He's something a little bit different. He's a little bit more energetic than a Harry Winks, Rob, and can play a little bit more. So I like the couple of signings they've brought in. Of course, they know them very well from their time together at Juventus. Paratici's going to go there at certain times, I'm sure, to bring in the players. There's already several now, I think, from Italian football at the football club. Mm. So I think the fans wanted Bentancur to start. He didn't. Came into the game and made an impact. But that's something we're going to see, yeah. And you know, you're right, and the summer will be a big one for Spurs. You know, again, they concede a late goal to lose this game at home to Southampton.
Yeah.
And we all know the front three players are what they are, and we all know that it's mostly going to be counter-attacking football, but they've got to be stronger defensively. If the foundation isn't there, when teams play good football, whether it's Southampton or really good teams, they've got to be confident they can defend those attacks.
Mm.
And I'm still a little surprised, because you'd assume that Antonio Conte, by hook or by crook, is going to find a way to be defensively stronger. And mostly there has been an improvement in that side, but again, it's still there. It's a nagging pain in the heel that they're still conceding too many goals.
He might suggest Eric Dier would make a difference as well. He's been out a little while.
Maybe.
But I think he's going to see a bit of an upgrade in players over the course of maybe two or three windows before we see a Conte team that I think he's happy with, that he knows he can send out, who can defend the way he wants and then play the football that the forwards will play.
Do you think he's going to get support in the summer window, Rob? Is there any way? And there's a little bit of talk around the media about him not being happy. And if he doesn't get his own way, he's going to be on his
I think there's 12 more months. I think there's 12 more months. I think there's two more windows. And I think he'll see if he is supported. Because he's the right guy to lead this football club. Absolutely no doubt. But he's going to have to get support. Probably cost two or three windows to get where he wants. If he doesn't get the support, he's off. Absolutely. He won't hang around.
Plus he's working with Fabio Paratici that he knows... Yeah. They did great work together before. So I can't imagine he'd sort of say, I'm off. Like, you're not giving me the money in the summer and his director of football is there as well. I would be really surprised. I'm with you. I think he'll have another season and I think there will be signings. I think they will spend some money. Maybe not huge money, but enough to improve the team defensively. Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about a game at Molineux. Wolves 0, Arsenal 1. Two teams sort of vying for fourth spot. It was an Arsenal team that still was finding the back of the net of late, actually. They do get the goal. Courtesy of Gabriel, the centre-back. There was a little bit of confusion with Jose Sarr came out and challenged Lacazette. Lacazette got to the ball quickly. I think everybody looked at VAR and saw that actually Lacazette won the ball cleanly. Goal stood, Arsenal go 1-0 up. And then Arsenal, Robbie Musto become Arsenal. Find a way to get a man sent off, this time Gabriel Martinelli, who I believe got two yellow cards in a 5-second space of time to get sent off. And I was reading stats after the game and a few of our staff who were working with us. I mean, that's four red cards in the last six games in all competitions. I mean, however unlucky it can be in him, that's going to show a lack of discipline, a lack of professionalism, Rob, to me.
I think also another stat that I made a note of, Rob, 12 red cards in the Premier League since Arteta got the job.
Yeah, it's five more than anybody else, isn't it? It's five more than any other team.
Incredible number. You know, and a coach that's instilling, that wants to be, you know, immaculate and there's no room for error and, you know, it's like the Aubameyang stuff and discipline issues that he's been strong on before, yet they still are losing their emotional control in certain moments in certain games. Now, Gabriel Martinelli, I think, is going to be a brilliant player. Yeah. And, you know, maybe we all lose our heads sometimes. He tries to stop the throw-in. The throw-in goes through. They're on a break a little bit, so it's allowed to continue.
It's a challenge.
It makes another challenge straight afterwards. So
it was Granit Xhaka-like, wasn't it? If that was Xhaka, you'd go, yeah, that's Xhaka, that's what he does. But I thought Martinelli might be a little bit smaller than that. I mean, you block off the throw-in. I mean, I think you made a point, actually, and the more I thought about it, maybe the referee blows for the first throw-in, he doesn't make the second. But in a way, Martinelli also should know he's just pushed somebody as he's taken the throw-in. Now he's running back. Stay on your feet, don't dive in for a ball. And it could have put Arsenal in trouble. I mean, Eight Nuri had a goal disallowed just for offside. Then Donker had a header late on that just went over the top. And, you know, fortunately, they've got the clean sheet. I think that's 11 clean sheets now for Ramsdale, who's been in good form. And it's a 1-0 win that gets them the 3 points. But, you know, if they drop points, Rob, because of that, then that starts to hurt you. I mean, they're missing for the next game anyway.
Mm. But they needed that, Arsenal. They hadn't scored for the last, was it, four or five games or something? Yeah. They're goalless. They haven't been playing particularly well. That's a good win. 1-0 away at Wolves. Wolves are a good side that are eighth of themselves in the Premier League. So well done, Arsenal. Again, we couldn't, you know, we had Liverpool going on in one monitor and trying to get a close look at it. So we couldn't get a real close look at it. But 1-0 away from them at Wolves with 10-man situation for them. Well done, you know, and the goal was a scrappy goal, mate. We did the highlights on our show and who cares? Lacazette and the goalkeeper kind of came together. I think they both kind of missed it, really. And then it went right through to Gabriel, who scored. So, yeah, Arsenal back on the winning trail now, and we'll feel that they're going for the top four. I mean, that top four spot, or the fourth spot, is totally up for grabs. And Arsenal, there's no reason why Arsenal can't be there if they can keep everybody fit and keep it going again. But they needed to score, and they needed to get a win again, and they've done it. So well done.
A couple of games in hand on West Ham, haven't they? I think three games in hand. They sit 4 points behind them at the moment. So, yeah. Definitely in with a shout if they can keep a bit of form going and keep their emotional control. One place we know is always emotional. Liverpool Anfield at home to a Leicester City team that have kind of imploded a little bit of late. Lots of changes for Brendan Rodgers' team. He had a number of big key players on the bench in terms of maybe just changing things around, giving people a different look. Obviously, unhappy with one or two players. Decent game for Liverpool. I thought started a little slowly. Leicester had one or two chances, but once they got in the groove, started to win the ball back, started to press, made opportunities, got the goal courtesy of a set piece. I mean, a real Achilles heel for Leicester. I think that's 13 goals conceded now from set pieces, 10 from corner kicks, and Virgil van Dijk just jogs his way past Wilfred Ndidi to get a header. Ball drops out. Diogo Jota's there. 11th goal of the season for him. And Liverpool are off and running. And they didn't have too many scares. Leicester, you know, tried to defend stoutly. But from the moment the goal went in, it didn't seem it was always a matter of, you know, the next goal, whether Liverpool will get it. Jota ends up getting it in the end. Nice little six-yard box finish. And Liverpool get the job done.
Yeah, Leicester, I thought, got worse. I thought it started okay. 4-4-1-1 shape. You know, just trying to react from the Nottingham Forest FA Cup loss at the weekend. And then when the first goal goes in, I mean, they defended okay, Rob, but there was nothing going forward, was there? There was nothing. Yeah. I mean, they got further back. And it's actually, I guess, impressive that they actually managed to stay in the game, because at 1-0, you're absolutely in the game. Whatever's going on, you're going to have a chance of going up the other end and scoring a goal. They had a couple of tiny looks, but mostly this was all about Liverpool confident, comfortable. And they seemed to get more excited the longer the game went on.
Yeah,
It was kind of really low energy in the first kind of 15, 20 minutes. And then it livened up the second half when Mo Salah came on. Liverpool are playing well, Rob. They're playing well. Luis Diaz looks like he's going to be a good fit. You know, we'll see how effective he is. He's quick. He works his socks off. From that left-hand side, he drifts across the field, which is a little bit different to the others, different to Sadio Mane. I guess it's okay with the manager, Klopp, to let him get involved with it. He pops up on the right-hand side sometimes, through the middle. He makes runs in behind, Rob, probably more than the others, I noticed in this game. So he'll try and get in behind to threaten the back line, which is good, because Liverpool don't always have that, particularly when Firmino plays. You got Jota scoring goals. You got Mo Salah coming back and looking like he wants to, you know, get cracking at it straight away. Yeah. You've got Harvey Elliott come back into the field in midfield. You got Curtis Jones. You know, I might mention on the last podcast, Rob, it's only a few days ago now, but I feel that they're in a good spot. They're in a good place for the future. Like, he's slowly built, you know, not replacing, but he's adding options to this squad. With some younger players that look like they're going to do really well. And I just think there's a long way to go to Man City. I get that. And Man City are heavy favourites. But the way that Liverpool look right now, for me, the way that they're playing, the options that they've got, the hunger that they're showing, they can run City all the way through. All the way through. Unless something crazy happens with it. But they look like they're up for a challenge and they look like they're winning every game at the moment.
Yeah, I think Jurgen Klopp himself has talked about coming out this week and said this is the best group he's had around him since he's been at the football club. Obviously, a bit more experience, some younger legs in there, so you can start to see where the transition might look like. It's interesting as well that their next two games, they got Burnley and Norwich, the next two Premier League games. They play Inter Milan and the Champions League, but get winnable games where he might be able to gain to change things up, keep things fresh. And I think before, let's not forget, Rob, sort of as Christmas was coming, we kept on saying African Cup of Nations is going to come and Liverpool are losing Salah and Mane. Well, that's done. Mane's won it. Salah went close, but they're both back. So we saw Salah today. There's talk that Mane's had a couple of days rest. He'll be back for the next game. And so, you know, still in good shape. City haven't gone, you know, that far away, 9-point gap with a game in hand and a big match, I believe, to play in on April. I believe, the 9th.
It's a long way off, Rob, isn't it?
But in some respect, Rob, that's got to be the carrot now for Liverpool.
Stay in touch.
Like, stay in touch till we get there. And then let's get there and then let's see what happens that day. Because that way, we've got a real title race on. But can't afford to be sloppy, can't afford to take their foot off the gas. But you say, they've got a nice little rhythm and I just feel a good sort of moment around the football club. Klopp seems a lot happier with things. Very few players injured. You know, most of his squad fit and ready to play. So, yeah, they're in a good spot.
One more thought, Rob, before we move on. Like, the Champions League is upcoming again.
Yeah.
And we know that the Man City squad, with their rotation, puts them in a great position to to do that. Do you think Liverpool now are enhanced in that in a similar way? With Luis Diaz coming through.
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
You know, the Jota's emerging. They've got more options now in front areas than they've
That's
had.
That's a good shout. And that might be some of the Premier League games. That might be, you know, let's say in Norwich you were playing. He might not play. He might give Salah a rest.
Right.
No, we've just got to mention, and you've just made me thought, before we go, mate, Diogo Jota, by the way, is a little diamond.
I know he's a little diamond.
He's a little diamond that's coming in that football club. Probably most of us thought as a backup to the front three. And I tell you what, mate, his movement, his football IQ, his positioning, his little goal scoring, he gets the goals that Bobby Firmino's never going to get. The toe pokes, the ball drops down, the right place.
Yeah, he's not going to link the play the same. He's not going
to back heel and drop his shoulder. But he's a goal scorer. And when Liverpool, you know, needs something different, on days when it hasn't, he's become the something different.
Totally.
When the football doesn't quite work, when they're not scoring worldy goals, when the fullbacks are not going down and creating all kinds of havoc, they've got a real six-yard box goal scorer who can get you out of trouble.
Do you think when he first came, Rob, like you said, it was like, well, you know, he's there to come in and it'll, over a period of time he'll... And then he started a lot of games and, wow, he's done pretty well. Are they going to share the time now with Firmino and Jota?
Absolutely.
I think we're at a point now where I don't think there's any question. I mean, maybe in some games you want some experience with Firmino. Maybe in the biggest games, he might start ahead of Diogo Jota. But I think we're going on a track of he's going to be the number one pick for the number nine, the central position in that front three.
I think these four they've got four main strikers now, Rob. I don't think there's anything between. I don't think when one plays, it's a drop off or not. I mean, it's just horses for courses, different games. He might want different personalities. But it certainly ain't a front three and the others finally. There's a front four now for Liverpool.
It's five. If you put in Luis Diaz in that as well.
Yeah, but I wouldn't quite put Diaz in. I wouldn't quite put Diaz at that level yet. But I would say it's a front four with the Diaz and, you know, all the younger players to come in. But yeah, that's what Diogo Jota's done. I mean, he's got 12 Premier League goals, mate. Only Mo Salah's got more in the Premier League. I mean, it's ridiculous little numbers. So good day for Liverpool. Not another great day for Leicester. And got to do some work on set pieces, Leicester. Stay with your man. Manchester City 2, Brentford 0. I think we pretty much expected City to get this one done. We had Mahrez with a penalty kick after Raheem Sterling, I believe, one of the most penalties in Premier League history now, 23. Just with that look, pace, and change of direction, draws the foul, gets a foul, and Myers puts it away, and then Kevin De Bruyne finishes it off with a typical Kevin De Bruyne heavy right foot slap Sterling's missed a chance, and Manchester City keep ticking along, mate.
They do. Again, the changes up front are always numerous. Sterling back on the left-hand side. I feel like we haven't seen Raheem Sterling playing on the left consistently for quite a long time now. Jack Grealish, of course, has been playing there, but didn't start the game, was on the bench, and this is what you get at this football club. If you're not And he's been given a good run of games to really start scoring and producing the assists and the goals. He hasn't. And, you know, he might be out of the team for a little bit now. But Sterling, of course, and Phil Foden, I think, is the best false nine at the club to do that position. Played that position again. Mahrez on the right-hand side. I mean, what can you say? I mean, it's almost automatic, isn't it, with some of these games, particularly at home against the smaller teams, that they're going to find a way to score, and whoever it might be, De Bruyne and the midfield players, Mahrez with a penalty. So, job done. Still have that gap at the top. And others like Liverpool will just hope that at some point they'll chuck in another Crystal Palace loss or some random game where they're not quite at it and they give up some points.
And obviously they've got the Champions League coming up, mate. Do you think anything changes for Pep, or does he just continue down the same road? League games, I'll take that comes... Or does his focus at some point start to be? Because it's the one thing now that people can bash, isn't it? Well, we haven't won the Champions League. Oh, he's not won the Champions League with them. Will that affect him, do you think, in any way?
I don't think so, Robert. I don't think we should expect anything different in the subsequent knockout rounds. There'll be rotation. We've said it a million times. There's no best team. There isn't really a best team. He's got like three or four best teams. Yeah. There's certain important players, but not that many. It might not be Diaz that plays, it might be Stones that plays, it might be Mahrez, it might be Grealish, it might... So, I think he believes in his squad. I think the rotation will be there. It's how they've been so consistent because they can rest players all the time. It's just the final rounds, isn't it, Rob? I think, you know, it's going to take some effort to beat them over two legs until you get, unless we'll see what the draws bring up, but, you know, around the semi-final time, then there might be more of a focus on what's my best, my feels my best 11. We thought we knew that into the blimmin' final of last year him to change and around, make some crazy stuff that I am sure he'll never do that again and not play one of his Fernandinho or Rodri's. But no, I you know, he'll go again and they'll try and find a way and maybe this is the year for them. But it might put a little bit more pressure on the league games and they might risk conceding.
Just take a little bit.
Might do. Yeah.
It's interesting, mate, and it's a conversation I'm not going to bring up now because it could be one of those that I think I heard a really interesting pub debate. I don't know if you saw Thomas Frank sort of said after the game, thought his team did quite well, you know, we were playing the best team in the world and Pep kind of went, we're not the best team in the world and blah, blah, blah. And it was this kind of argument and I heard a kind of radio debate after and then sort of like, has Pep produced the best Premier League team ever? And I know it's a bit poor and a bit ringy, but then people started to say, well, you know, the United teams with Ronaldo and Tevez and Rooney, the Arsenal Invincibles, you know, the City Centurions, the Chelsea 04-05 under Jose, like only 15 goals conceded, only one loss all season. Yeah, the Liverpool intensity, heavy metal football, the Leicester City sort of Claudio Ranieri is, you know, who's produce the greatest Premier League team. And I thought, well, you know, one day on the pod, we might sit and have a little discussion about that, maybe compare and contrast one or two. But it was interesting where Pep was at this place where I'm not worried about those things. I worry about the hunger of my team and being ready for what's required week in, week out. And he said, we play Brentford, the team that's promoted, the team that wants to beat us, and we go about our business in the right way. That's the thing that impresses him more than anything else.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's a master at casting off some of these quotes and some of these stories and some of these kind of comparisons and stuff like that. I think you know, the squad that they have this year, Rob, and the ability to change many players and hardly any effect on the team, I'm not sure we've seen that before. You could argue forever about the best 11 of City and some of these other teams, which is the best.
Yeah.
Really tough. Like, there's some brilliant teams. But in terms of the squad and the way that it changes, I honestly can't remember another team having so much fluidity and options for different games in different weeks and the squad. I mean, I don't know whether there's been a better squad and the way it's coached with Pep Guardiola in the Premier League era. But that's for another day, mate. That's gonna,
absolutely.
That will take a while.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For today, let's talk about Newcastle United because they got themselves the third win of the season, scored three goals against Everton. St. James Park was buzzing, Eddie Howe was jumping up and down the touchline, Amanda Staveley and the ownership group were hugging and high-fiving and all sorts in the director's box. Frank Lampard didn't look quite so happy on his side, a bit of a reality for him and Everton, Musty. Newcastle needed that. I thought, gives them hope, because Eddie's got to start putting some wins together now. They've got the group in, they've got Grimeras and Trippier and Target and Dan Burn and Chris Wood. So that's who we're going with now. We've got a group. Now they've got to start putting some result together and get themselves out of trouble.
Yeah, and they have, and this is a great result, wasn't it? What a brilliant result. And I think St. James's is going to be buzzing. It's absolutely going to be buzzing every single game. You know, obviously home mostly. To the end of the season, they always take a lot of fans away games anyway. They all wanted to see Bruno Guimarães, the new Brazilian kid they've got, start the game. He didn't. He came on. He's going to be a player. He's going to be a player for them for a long time. He's a central midfield player that's going to be exciting to watch, can do a little bit of everything. He's a little bit different to you. He's not a big guy. You know, he can do all sorts of things in midfield. He's a dribbling midfield player, very technical, very good player. So I think he'll do a really great job at the football club. But yeah, the wins are coming. And there's other players to come back in the side. You know, whether it's Dan Burn defensively, you still worry a little bit about Newcastle United. But, yeah. You know, he's finding a way to integrate these new players and making them a little bit stronger. Everton on the other side, Rob, you know, I think I remember talking about Frank Lampard's appointment in the last pod, wasn't it? Where
you weren't sure, and now
the weekend, Rob. What it's the second Leeds. Game in Everton v Leeds. I mean, wow, what a big game that is for Everton. What a big game it is.
2 points from the bottom three, Everton right now.
I mean, you got to think, Rob. Right, and the only thing, like, Calvert-Lewin was on the bench, Van der Beek and Dele Alli. Now,
yeah.
Their best 11, right? And we're assuming, by the way, that Calvert-Lewin is going to be okay after his injury. Mm. We're assuming he gets back to his level that he's capable of.
Yeah.
And we're assuming that Donny van der Beek is going to improve their midfield. And we're assuming that Dele Alli is going to get back to somewhat. And I'm not saying even 80%. If he gets to 75% of what he was before, he can add something. That's when you sort of conclude, well, there's enough here. There's enough here to stay in the division and find a little run of form.
Can I just say that's a lot of assuming you've done there, yeah, by the way. You're assuming.
Well, it is, isn't it? Well, that's where Everton are. They're assuming Frank Lampard's going to be okay for this job, and he's going to be okay in a relegation fight where I'm not sure he's ever had one before. So that Everton, it ends up being kind of gambly, like a little bit risky, like good names, like certainly good names to come in and you're hoping that it's all going to work out. What's your gut telling
too many good players for me, Musty, to go down. And good players, if only they play one game in four, can have 3-4 games between now and the end of the season, have enough points to beat. That would be my thing.
Yeah.
And if you can get hold of the ball and get them with possession and make them feel better about themselves and play with a bit of confidence, there should be no trouble. But, and there is a massive but here, this is Everton. And we don't know. We don't know. This is Frank with a new challenge. And I've said the rigour, I think, will do him good to be spooked a little bit by what a relegation could be and could mean. So that he's going to have to learn his trade and tactically be right, and the personnel be right, and the systems be right, and make changes when they need to, and get his team possessing the ball and playing with confidence. This is why he's been given the job. This is what Premier League managers have to do. Ralph Hasenhüttl has coached this Southampton team that looked at one point like they were going to be bottom three into a position where they go to the new White Hart Lane and play Spurs off the field. Everton can do that with that quality player, but Frank's got to get it out of them.
He's got massive decisions, Rob. Decisions everywhere you look. Mm-hmm.
With
what team to
with
play?
No experience. With no real experience.
Yeah, with limited experience. And decision-making is a coach, standing on the sideline there.
Yeah.
And there was moments, Rob, at Everton, at Chelsea, remember we used to say, God, he looks miserable. You know, he looks unhappy. He looks frustrated. Yeah. Now, when you're in a relegation fight, you don't need your manager to be that way. Mm. Absolutely, you don't. You need the manager to be strong, confident, like, we've got this. That's what you need. And I'm not saying he's not going to do that, but we don't know. I'm just going back to looks when he was at Chelsea, where he looked kind of down and miserable and fed up with it all. So, again, we don't want to paint the doom and gloom picture. And the players that they've got, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to get relegated, but this is a big game against a team that will transition in Leeds United that are dangerous. They're a story in themselves this season as well. And they've had a poor season. They're still missing their biggest players in Calvin Phillips and Patrick Bamford. Bamford's been out, I think, pretty much all the season. They could be dangerous. What a game that was, by the way, Robbie Earle. Aston Villa versus Leeds United, 3-3. What a game it was, and what entertainment and...
The little magician's back in him. Yeah, a great advert for Premier League football. Little magician is back.
He's back. I mean, how good is he, mate? I think he's got as many assists as, I think I read a stat, as Jack Grealish or something already.
Yeah, and Sancho, I think, or something. Two goals and two assists now, isn't he, I think? Four goal involvements.
Yeah. He's a special talent, and I bet the Villa fans are buzzing. I bet they're absolutely loving it.
And you should also mention, I think you gave him underappreciated player of the week, a couple of weeks ago as well, Jacob Ramsey, my friend. The midfield powerhouse.
Yeah.
Who can get forward, who's got good feet, who's got an eye for goal, who's got a manager who was one of the best we've ever seen in the Premier League at doing that. He's going to be some player, this kid.
Oh, he really is. And you look at the other midfield players in there, I mean, there's got good options. John McGinn's a good player, Douglas, so he's can sit in there. But I think, you know, they're more the names. Jacob Ramsey, I'm not sure what his numbers are. I haven't got the numbers to me yet right here, but it seems like when we watch him play, I mean, he's always getting in there and creating stuff. And I think one was a right foot, one was a left foot. That ability to go forward from midfield, as you said, with Stephen Gerrard probably giving him little bits of words of wisdom to try and help him. But I think the Philippe Coutinho is obviously the headline.
Catalyst,
hit the ground running, like he's never been away, enjoying his football. I'm sure the fans are loving it. Villa Park, in this sort of form and confidence, is a great place to play the football. So well done to him. But Leeds United, Rob, always in it. Always in it. And I'm going to chuck on it. I'm going to chuck in my underappreciated to a player that kind of got moved out of Manchester United that you know, wasn't deemed to be good enough, really. Dan James, a couple of goals in this game. A little slow, I would say, to really make an impact at Leeds United. Difficult in a team that's been struggling for the most part of the year. But the first goal particularly, I thought, really clever turn and move and to squeeze it into that far corner. A player that, I don't know, underappreciated. Maybe United was never his level. But it's nice to see a player that's talented, that's quick, that has a great attitude, that works very, very hard, that's kind of ideal for Leeds and Bielsa wanted him for a long period of time, doing well. So maybe he has been underappreciated at Manchester United and maybe he has a little bit at Leeds United. So it's good to see him score a couple of goals, make an impact, be a player that can step up and score in the absence of Patrick Bamford. So I just thought it's time to tip my hat to Dan James in a really good game. And a good performance from him. So he gets my award for this midweek.
Yeah, good shout. It looks like he, you know, you would think he's a perfect fit for a Leeds team and maybe a couple of goals, just give a bit of confidence and he can kick on from there. A couple of other results we had. Norwich City 1, Crystal Palace 1. Norwich City got the fastest goal of the Premier League this season, 38 seconds. Temo Pukki fires one in, but Palace score an equaliser through a lovely Wilf Zaha goal from about 20 odd yards, and then Wilf from 12 yards maybe slipped or lost his foot, you know, lost his concentration, somehow pulls the ball wide, and it's one of those you watch again and think, how has he done that, somebody of that talent? So I think Patrick was just disappointed with the overall result, the start from his Palace team, but obviously could have gone on to win it with the penalty kick, but a point apiece for both of those teams. And then the other game, Rob, that had some headlines both on and off the pitch. West Ham United 1, Watford 0. West Ham United, courtesy of a Jared Bowen sort of deflected shot, gets the goal. But many of the headlines were stolen by Kurt Zouma and the negative press around, you know, what we saw with his cat and the animal cruelty and the knock-on effect that this has had, Rob, really, with Zouma. With West Ham, with sponsors, and just, I think, public opinion of this football club and how maybe players should be dealt with in these situations.
The club, you said it, Rob, and we chatted, I think, this morning.
Yeah.
The club should have taken charge of this.
Absolutely.
It shouldn't have been David Moyes picking a team. They should have pulled Kurt Zouma to the side and say, this behaviour is not acceptable at our football club. They've subsequently said that there's a 2-week wages fine, which apparently is the most you can fine. I'm not sure that's 100% true, but in our day it was. 2 weeks wages was the most you could fine. And, you know, discipline it. And the RSPCA have been around to take his cats away to assess the situation. He's probably going to lose his cats. Their sponsorship, Vitality, I think, is pulled out of sponsoring. He's lost his own personal sponsor, I think, Rob, in Adidas. So it was like, he shouldn't have played in the game, Rob, should he?
No, he shouldn't have been involved. It should not have been involved. And listen, David Moyes, whether he wants to make a football decision, sort of talked about being one of their best players, I believe, or something like that. Should have been totally taken out. The football club should have said, he's taken out, he's not even in the squad today, whether he doesn't turn up, but we don't want him at the stadium, blah, blah, blah. And then I think because of that, and then you move forward, you have a chance to move on, but I think it's badly backfired on West Ham, quite rightly to some degree. And I don't think we've heard the last of it yet, Rob. And it was a shocking thing for Zuma to do. And he's now going to have to deal with the consequences.
Well, I think there's pressure on him not playing the next game this weekend.
Mm, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You've sort of failed to understand what goes through some people's heads at certain times. Mm. And his brother was there with him, Rob, with the videoing, and as if it was some kind of.
Apparently, he's got banned now, hasn't he, from his club? I think, is it Dagenham and Redbridge?
Yeah, he's been suspended, banned, I think, hasn't he, from his club?
So, for things.
Yeah, a real horrible incident that you know we have to comment on. It's just that it was shocking and I thought handled really badly, and I think everybody feels that
in what's been a brilliant season for West Ham, a brilliant team for David Moyes, and you know they're almost becoming people's second team, you know, working on, look how they've gone from one team playing a certain way to this, you know what you're going to get, give everything, you know, skillful players giving their all, and this has just tainted that a little bit. And we'll see how, obviously, the next week or two things play out there at Upton Park. Listen, mate, that was the midweek that always mattered. Top of the table, Man City win again, but a Diogo double. It got enough for Liverpool, I think, to give us a title race, while at the basement, Newcastle proved too much for an Everton team that are too good to go down, aren't they? We'll be back on Super Bowl Sunday. That's on 13th of February this week, when we'll look back at all the games from match week 25, and that's before the big game when the Rams take on the Bengals in the magnificent SoFi Stadium. We'll be there, sitting outside the SoFi Stadium for Super Bowl 56, and we're going to try and get in there and have a look at things, Mr. Musto and I. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, be healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.